Together with Augustinians from throughout the world, Pope Francis celebrates the Feast of St. Augustine, which falls on August the 28th. The Pope will lead the celebration mass at the Church of St. Augustine in Rome. The occasion also marks the opening of the Order's 184th General Chapter. As the Prior General of the Augustinians, Father Robert Prevost, explains, 90 friars from various countries who constitute the membership of the chapter will gather in the succeeding days and weeks to discuss the state of the order, decide questions of special importance, formulate a program for the next 6 years, and elect a new prior general and the members of his council. But first, he tells us why Augustinian spirituality is relevant in today's society.
I think there are many reasons that could be given to respond to that question. Certainly during the years of Pope Benedict, the emeritus pope, his years as pontiff, he made very clear some of the answers because of the lifelong journey of Augustine, who throughout his life continued to search for God and wrote about it, in a way that was understandable for people of his time, and which in many ways is still understandable for people who are searching today. He made very clear how important it is to use the intellect, to use the God-given gift of being able to think, the gift of reason. And at the same time, he was a man of heart, a man who knew what it meant to feel deeply, to live compassion, to live passionately, and to be able to share both the struggles and the joys that he experienced, especially in his book, which is still widely read around the world, The Confessions. But to share that struggle and to say that precisely in the struggle of humanity, God is present. God wants to be found. God makes himself a part of our human lives. And so I think Augustine continues to be a man for our times.
On the 28th, it is the Feast of St. Augustine. It is also the day which sees the opening of your general chapter. And I understand that about 90 friars from all over the world will be participating. Can you tell us what the general chapter entails, what the aim of it is, and what will happen?
One of the elements of the consecrated life, and in a very special way, the orders that have grown out of what we call the mendicant tradition, a very important part of our life is precisely when we gather in chapter. We make decisions in a style that is born out of a dialogue, of listening, of working together, and of planning together to look towards the future. So this particular general chapter, now it's our 184th general chapter since the juridical institution of the order in the 13th century, men from around the world will be gathering together to, first of all, reflect upon the reality of the order today, to evaluate different things that have gone on in the life of the order in recent times, whether different projects, missions, elements of our life, both as consecrated men and also as, if you will, apostolic men who work in the church in many different ways, and then to plan for the future, to look forward. Where do we want to go from here? And to evaluate, if you will, or to reflect upon our lives in order to make the choices that we need to make to continue to be able to serve the church into the future. Part of the general chapter is the election of a new prior general, the man who will take up this post and continue to lead along with the members of the general council who will work with him and accompany him in the service of serving the order. And both through leadership, accompanying, encouraging, sometimes correcting as may be needed, but being in that particular role of leadership in the Augustinian order. So general chapter is indeed a very important time in the life of the order, and it basically is looking forward and saying, where do we move from here? I think this particular chapter is important because we're living a very historical time in the church. The year 2013 will be remembered for many, many years to come with the very courageous decision of Pope Benedict to step down, and the prophetic leadership that Pope Francis is already offering very clearly for the whole church and for the world. This chapter takes place in that context, and I am sure that we will all be reflecting upon those ecclesial events and understand that a general chapter is also a church event, and that's what we will be celebrating.
You mentioned Pope Francis, our first Jesuit pope. Are there any similarities, connections between Augustinians and Jesuits?
Certainly, we're talking about two institutes of consecrated life. We're all religious who profess the same vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. And so, of course, there are some elements of our lives that are very similar. There are also elements of our life that are quite different. Augustinians, more in the mendicant tradition, place a stronger emphasis, if you will, on the value of fraternity and community life. St. Ignatius had a different point of view about that, and the Jesuits in general put more emphasis on the apostolic dimension of religious life. But as a matter of fact, when it comes down to looking at our lives, there are many points in common. One of them, which I would mention right off, is the dedication of both orders to Catholic education. Universities, so higher education, scientific investigation, and also schools, primary and especially secondary schools. Both orders have a special dedication to that particular mission. There are many other elements as well. The Augustinians come out of a tradition which precedes the Jesuits by several centuries, and the Jesuits, as St. Ignatius came along, his whole movement was, in a sense, a new kind of style of living religious life at that time, but actually both orders are dedicated to many, many similar missions and services in the Church.
Now, you also mentioned that this occasion will be the occasion for the election of a new prior general. I don't know if you have been in term for two terms. Right? So I don't know if you're still a candidate. Are you?
No. The constitutions of our order clearly indicate that no man serves in any particular office for more than two terms. So I have completed those two terms. I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I have had, but I don't think that there's any kind of serious thought being given to making some kind of exception to the rule that we have in our constitutions.
Will the prior general continue to be a resident in Rome? I understand the Augustinians are all over the world. I also wanted to ask you, in what country are you most present? But will the prior general be staying here in Rome?
The headquarters of the order, therefore the home, if you will, of the prior general is here in Rome, as it has been for centuries, really since the juridical or institutional creation founding of the order. Our curia is here right next to St. Peter's Square, a very privileged place to live and to work. But the ministry, the service of the prior general, actually brings him to all parts of the order. So in my own experience, for example, 6 or 7 months out of the year, I was not in Rome. I was traveling, visiting the different places where we work. I suspect that to a greater or lesser extent, the same thing will be true. Half of the time in Rome, there is a good amount of work to be taken care of here in Rome. Certainly, modern communications, internet, have helped a great deal in terms of especially of communicating with the different friars of the order. But there are responsibilities that can only be taken care of here in Rome that the prior general personally would have to follow up on. In terms of where the Augustinians are most present throughout the world, the countries that have, the numerically speaking, the greatest presence of Augustinian friars would be Spain, the United States, Mexico, the Philippines, Italy, Nigeria, and Peru, and I think pretty much in that order. We have a strong presence in Latin America, in almost all the countries of Latin America, and a growing presence in Asia and Africa. So obviously the commitments of both the prior general but of the order as a whole would also have specific concentrations in those areas.
And would Augustinians be primarily concerned in educational projects, as you mentioned before, or do you have other missionary projects as well?
Education certainly would be one of the largest commitment if you were going to choose categories, so to speak, of the type of apostolic work that we do. But we have many parishes throughout the world, especially after the Second Vatican Council, with the renewal of parish life and the understanding of parish being a community center where people really come into contact with the proclamation of the word and the celebration of the sacraments of real ecclesial life. Augustinians very much collaborate with the local church wherever we are. So we do have many parishes in all the different areas where we work. We do a fair amount of, if you will, primary evangelization in parts of the world that are not, let's say, predominantly Christian, and where new missionary work is necessary, as well as working perhaps numerically in a less significant way, but in some very significant projects in parts of the world that are very much the center of what we call the new evangelization, announcing once again the good news of the gospel to areas that perhaps were at one time Christian but no longer are. Eastern Europe, for example, some other countries. Mission, for example, in Cuba, which is a particularly difficult society where the church suffered a great deal for a long period of time, but where today I think is once again growing, but where it faces some specific challenges. So, you know, I think every specific place that I could mention, you'd see different aspects, perspectives on what it means to be missionary, to announce the good news, and Augustinians are involved in that.
How many Augustinians are there in the world?
The Augustinian order it actually has three different components to it, if you will. The Augustinian friars, priests and brothers, are about 2,800 in 50 countries. We also have what used to be called the Second Order, Augustinian Sisters of Contemplative Life, monasteries of Augustinian nuns, in several different continents, primarily in Spain and in Italy, but they're also located from North America, Latin America, Africa, Asia. So we have Augustinian nuns. There'd be another 1,000 of them. And then there are numerous congregations of apostolic or active religious life, primarily of women, but a few of men that are aggregated to the order. So they're juridically not part of the order, but they're very much part of the Augustinian family. And then, of course, we have numerous lay groups that form part of Augustinian fraternities who, as lay people, also have a sharing in what we call the life of the Augustinian order.
All following the rule of St. Augustine. Now, you also have a very beautiful church in Rome, the church in Campo Marzio, with a staircase that goes up very steep and a Caravaggio inside. And I think it also contains a very famous Madonna del Parto, the Madonna of the Birth. What can you tell me about this church?
The church located there in Campo Marzio near Piazza Navona has a long history in the order. And actually, up until the time of the mid to late 1800s, that was where the general curia of the order was located. So the life of the order has a very long history at that location. Without going into the architectural details and artists and things, because it's, a storehouse of many treasures. It's a very beautiful place. It's a church also where the tomb of St. Monica is found. And many people who have devotion to St. Monica, including Pope Francis, who used to frequent that church as Cardinal Bergoglio when he would come to Rome, he stayed near there. And he would visit the church and pray especially to St. Monica, the mother of St. Augustine, whose feast is the 27th of August. So we celebrate both of them, one after the other. It's also a beautiful occasion to understand how significant the relationship of St. Monica and St. Augustine was and continues to be. But that church also has seen, of course, a great deal of history of the order through the centuries. Just on a cultural perspective, and this is another aspect of what Augustinians are about in terms of the intellectual life and promoting culture and looking for ways of engaging with society and with culture today. Right next to the Church of St. Augustine, there's a very famous library, the Bibliotheca Angelica, which was originally founded by an Augustinian, and which, when the Italian state, Italian government was born as the modern Italy that we know today, many church properties were confiscated, including ours. But that library, fortunately, has been very well preserved since that time, and the Italian government continues to sponsor, if you will, promote the work that has gone on that library for many years. I believe that was the first public library in Rome, founded by an Augustinian, and its work continues today. So there's that cultural element side by side with the, if you will, religious, devout element, which are two aspects of what Augustinian life is about and what we very strongly believe church life needs to be about.
It also hosts a lot of concerts, or it used to. I remember going to listen to chamber music inside the library.
Yes, the library, absolutely. Again, another example of how the whole idea of promoting cultural events is another way of understanding, looking for beauty in life, and beauty being, of course, a sign of God's creation. So whether it be music and art and study, reading, if you will, the conservation of important literary works, all these are aspects that are very much tied in together, which lead us in our ongoing search for God, again, to come back to that very Augustinian theme.
You mentioned 2013 as an important moment in the life of the church. And at this moment, everyone and us, of course, we are trying to discover more and more who Cardinal Bergoglio, Pope Francis, is. And he revealed himself every day in different ways. But you just revealed to me that he has a particular devotion for St. Monica. Can you tell me what your feelings, hopes, expectations are regarding this new pontificate as Prior General of the Augustinians, of course?
In a very special way, I think that the world came to know or to recognize a dimension of the life of Pope Francis during the World Youth Day. And the excitement and the great desire, almost passion, you would say, for Pope Francis to be close to the marginalized, to the people who suffer, to the little ones, to young people, always with the goal, if you will, with the purpose of wanting to express through his person, as much as through his words, that special closeness, that care, that love, that mercy that God has for all of us. And it seems that in some very special ways, Pope Francis, at least up to this point in his brief pontificate, is really dedicated and dedicating himself to expressing that dimension of the gospel. It takes nothing away from other things that have been emphasized, spoken about in the past under any of the previous popes. And in fact, you can see a lot of continuity in what Pope Francis is doing, precisely in continuing some of the things that had begun under Pope Benedict, including the Year of Faith, which is very significant for all of us. And it's a very significant Augustinian theme, if I may put it that way. His first encyclical about faith, the light that faith is in our lives. His understanding of this mission of being the Bishop of Rome, of being the Pope, of being the leader of the church, is a very, very great gift to all of us. And I think that Augustinians are very much a part of this, and we feel ourselves also both filled with gratitude for all that Pope Francis is doing, and at the same time challenged, and on some very deep levels, because of what the Pope is saying in general to priests and religious, of how we all need to look for ways to live simpler lives, to be closer to the people, and especially to the poor, to reach out to those who are suffering, to be that, if you will, merciful, loving, and compassionate face of God to the people who are so much longing for some kind of consolation, pardon, mercy. And so I think in a special way the Pope is challenging us, and Augustinians are certainly part of who has to hear that challenge. Pope Francis is calling us out to say, you've got to be more authentic, more faithful, more dedicated to living this life that we have professed.
Thank you very, very much. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
No, I say happy Feast of St. Augustine to everyone who's listening. This is not just an Augustinian feast. It's St. Augustine is indeed a father of the church, great doctor of the church, doctor of grace, as he's known, and who has a message to share with everyone. So just to say happy feast day, happy Feast of St. Augustine to everyone, and ask for God's blessing on all those who are listening.